so much development. The fact that they have the most advanced healthcare system, one of the most advanced educational systems, free for all in the public. I was there last year and was incredibly inspired by the will of the people, by how much they were able to go about their lives not having to worry about the basic necessities of life that we have to worry about, that people die every day for because they can't afford their medication. People die in debt. I speak as someone with $150,000 worth of student loan debt here in the U.S. and the richest country in the world. So when we're talking about who the system actually serves, we understand that this is not working for us here in the U.S. as working class people. So you've been with me, your host, Monica Cruz, and for the past hour, listening to Women Fight Back, WBAI 99.5 p.m. in New York City. Again, you can follow us on social media at WBAI Women, and every Thursday we upload our podcast. We're all out of time today. Until next time, you can join us next Wednesday at 7 p.m. Thank you. Another flow. Every time I hear a brother call a girl.
Code Pink, Women for Peace is coming to you live from Washington, D.C. and New York City, Thursday at 11 a.m. Code Pink Radio is an energizing new program focused on ending wars and militarism and building a peace economy. Listen weekly to robust conversation and inspiration from grassroots peacemakers from places like Korea, Yemen, Venezuela, Palestine, and Iran, as well as peacemakers in our nation's capital who are confronting war hawks in the White House and in Congress and modeling the actions we want our government to take. Again, that's Code Pink Radio, Thursdays at 11 a.m. on Washington, D.C.'s WPFW and New York City's WBAI, an engaging hour of cutting-edge conversation not to be missed.
We are women of the world. We're from the east, south, north, and west.
I'm Sean Rhodes, co-host and engineer of the award-winning Midnight Ravers. It's going to be Bacchanal time on Labor Day, Monday, September 2nd, when WBAI broadcasts all day from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. the Caribbean Carnival, live from Eastern Parkway in Brooklyn. That's when New York City will host what is now the biggest, most spectacular street celebration in the country. So be sure to tune in to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, on Monday, September 2nd, from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., live and direct from the Caribbean Carnival on Eastern Parkway, for the music, culture, and Bacchanal.
I'm on the side of the work cause the teachers are lunch ladies on the streets with brown mommies raising out brown babies.
The working class, like my parents, create all the wealth that billionaire Trump steals from us. But we outnumber them. Shut down Trump. No to anti-immigrant attacks. Legalization for all. We're building bridges this Labor Day and say there are no walls in the workers' struggle. So rally with us from 6 p.m. to midnight for fair compensation and benefits, for justice, dignity, and respect on the job and in our communities. We are workers who are coming together to say yes to workers' rights and organizing for them. 6 p.m. to midnight, September 2nd, Labor Day, over 99.5 FM. We're building bridges.
Did you know that when you apply for a job, your credit history may affect your chances of getting hired? And if you already have a job, your credit history can still be used against you. That's because a growing number of employers use credit reports to make hiring and firing decisions. This practice can have a discriminatory impact on people and communities of color and unfairly block many qualified people from employment. Help end this practice by speaking up. If you or someone you know has been turned down for a job or even fired from a job, job because of credit checks by an employer, please call NEDAP's Financial Justice Hotline at 212-925-4929. The New York City Financial Justice Hotline is open on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 12 to 2 p.m. Again, that number is 212-925-4929.
Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Hi, this is Virginia White of Earth, Wind, and Fire, and you're listening to The Sweet Spot on WBAI.
Hi, this is Ruth Pointer of the Pointer Sisters, and you're listening to The Sweet Spot on WBAI 99.5 FM.
It's the incredible Mr. Roy Ayers.
Woo-hoo! Hello, everybody.
Tune in to The Sweet Spot with Baby K and DJ Kyle McNeil. Tell them what we do, Kyle.
Every Thursday at 10 p.m., we will be featuring some of the best in soulful sounds with in-depth interviews with your favorite artists, special theme shows, and, you know, guest hosts.
Yeah, it's a pretty good time, ain't it?
Yep, because we're The Sweet Spot. Thursdays, 10 p.m. only on WBAI 99.5 FM, streaming online at WBAI.org.
Listener-sponsored community radio.
And this is another announcement.
The technical and creative team that has brought to these airwaves many of the most profound radio dramas to ever be transmitted will come together once again to present on Saturday, November 16th, 2019, something you have never witnessed before. Prepare yourself.
Oh, I was not prepared. Okay. You are listening to WBAI New York. It's, oh, wow, it's 5 minutes after 8 o'clock. Time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving. Now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse. We'll be right back.
another episode of Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you tonight. Joined by nobody, because nobody else is here, at least not yet. Wow, it's a little bit of a drizzle outside, and apparently that makes everybody move very, very slowly, and that is why we started a little bit late. But more importantly, this is a momentous program because we are marking the end of one of the older democratic, so-called democratic countries in the world, the United Kingdom, which until tonight comprised itself of England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland. And unfortunately, I guess all good things come to an end. Yeah, because tonight the country is slightly, you know, this is going to be going once a minute, as happens during state funerals. We basically have a situation over in the United Kingdom where Parliament is being suspended. That's what happens when you have inconvenient debate, when you have people who disagree with you. You shut them up. That is the new way. And as of today, Queen Elizabeth II has approved the new Prime Minister Boris Johnson, the Trump lookalike guy, the plan to suspend Parliament. She has approved that plan. It's not really her fault because she approves whatever she's asked. She's not supposed to really express an opinion. But basically what that means is that Parliament is going to be suspended in early September, around September 9th through September 12th, all the way up until October 14th. Just maybe turn that down a little bit. Yeah, it's going to be very annoying. So 5 weeks. 5 weeks, they're basically going to shut Parliament up, and there's not going to be any way that they can debate the issue of Brexit, which, as you may know, is happening on October 31st, with or without a deal. And Boris Johnson has said repeatedly that he will gladly, well, maybe not gladly, but he will certainly go through with it, even if there is no deal. Obviously, this is something that Parliament has been very, very strongly opposed to. But by shutting them up for 5 weeks, makes it a lot harder for them to do anything about it. It's just, it's really incredible to see this actually taking place. But it is true in the actual order. This day ordered by Her Majesty in Council that the Parliament be, I don't know how to pronounce this word, prorogued. It's not a word we use over here. On a day no earlier than Monday, the 9th day of September, no later than Thursday, the 12th day of September 2019, to Monday, the 14th day of October 2019. So we are going to be pretty much devoting this show to the memories of the United Kingdom, because after this, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know where it's going to go from here. You have a situation where Parliament is being silenced. You have a situation where the United Kingdom is going to leave the European Union without a deal in place. In all likelihood, there's going to be mayhem. There's going to be all kinds of economic catastrophe. Or maybe nothing will happen. Maybe everything will work out somehow. Seems kind of hard to believe, but it's entirely possible. We're opening up the phone lines to anybody from the United Kingdom who wants to call us. Obviously, anyone can call us, but we especially want to hear from people in the United Kingdom, because maybe soon you won't have phones. Who knows? Our phone number here is, of course, country code 1, and then the number is 212-209-2877. And again, I want to apologize for the rather last minute sound of this. It is rather last minute. I just got into the studio only a minute before I started talking. There's something going on downstairs. I don't know what it is, but it basically involves nobody being able to move. So we got here, Kyle and I got here. He's still parking the car, I think, and hopefully he'll be up soon. If there is a parking space anywhere in Brooklyn, everybody else is away for one reason or another. So this, I can't remember the last time I've been on Off the Hook by myself. It's kind of nice, actually. There's nobody to interrupt me, nobody to distract me in any way. Yeah, and I can just pretty much ramble on without anybody interrupting or debating. Or, you know what? It's just like what happened over there. There's no debate anymore. this is what it's going to be like in the United Kingdom. Nobody to talk to. Nobody will talk to you. We have some stories. And again, the phone number, 212-209-2877, especially for people in the United Kingdom or people who have opinions on the United Kingdom. We have some UK-based stories, such as an Uber advertising campaign in London has claimed its carpooling service reduces traffic, which contradicts the findings of the U.S. ride-hailing app company's own research. A large billboard poster displayed in London this month said Uber Pool reduces traffic by moving more people in fewer cars. It was displayed at a busy junction near two of Transport for London's main offices in Southwark. The poster has since been replaced. The claim contradicts evidence from a study sponsored by Uber and fellow ride-hailing app company Lyft that showed both were together responsible for as much as 13% of miles traveled by vehicles in the center of San Francisco, one of six U.S. cities that were studied. The report by the transportation consultancy Fair and Peers was based on data from Uber and Lyft. In a blog post accompanying the research, Chris Pangilnan, Uber's head of global security, global policy for public transportation, acknowledged that the evidence showed that his company and Lyft were likely to be contributing to an increase in congestion. The effect of ride-hailing apps on congestion is contested. They could reduce traffic by encouraging people to leave their cars at home, or they could increase the number of vehicles on the road if people switch from public transport. Now, asked about the poster, an Uber spokeswoman said, "We often run marketing campaigns all over the world to showcase the many features and products available through the Uber app, whether that's our safety toolkit or Uber Pool. More than 350,000 people in London regularly use Uber Pool to share their journey in 2019. These shared journeys have saved over 1.7 million miles from being driven in London." Wow. Interesting. Contradictions, but interesting story nonetheless. We have a caller. Is anybody on the line?
Yes, indeed. I'm calling from New York.
Okay, well, it's not really the UK, but it's close enough.
Yeah, well, it used to be a few centuries ago. That's why it's called New York, indeed. But I wanted to congratulate you on a rousing beginning. You know, sometimes radio can become an art form, and I really, really endorse and love what you did with the state funeral. And, you know, this occasion needs to be marked solemnly as indeed, and ironically as indeed you are. So keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Do you have any thoughts? Do you have any thoughts on
the news? Of course, I have lots of thoughts. How much time do you have?
Well, actually about 45 minutes, but share whatever thoughts you have on especially what happened today in the UK, but anything else having to do with technology is certainly welcome as well.
Well, I mean, I was, you know, shocked and flabbergasted like everybody else who has a brain and still working, because this is a real unexpected turn of events, you know. But I want to point out something that I haven't heard much on any kind of commentary, that, you know, the British monarchy is far from a symbolic head of state. It is the head of state. It's called Her Majesty's Government, Her Majesty's Prime Minister. So, Her Majesty, wake up and get off your behind, because you have a constitutional function to absolve. It's not enough to just say, oh, I have to listen to my advisors. No, you can fire the Prime Minister. It's in the Constitution of the UK. And I think it's high time that the Queen, if she still is the Queen, exercises her function.
Well, the thing is, if she were to do that, then she would be very much involved in government, which is what a lot of people don't want.
Never mind. You know, she is, you know, that's why it's called Her Majesty's Government, because it is hers. Like the country, it is hers. It's just that it's a constitutional expediency that basically, you know, the people don't pay attention to the words. But it's in her interest, it's in the monarchy's interest to have the subjects, don't forget they're called British subjects, to be governed by somebody that they, quote, choose. So you have social peace, but it is her stuff, it is her country, it is her government, And please, Her Majesty, take an active position for once in your life.
All right. Well, if Her Majesty is listening, please do that. Well, I don't know if I want that to happen, but I do want something to happen that prevents all the lunacy from continuing. So maybe extraordinary measures.
Well, as you say, democracy in the UK is finished. Until something does happen, the democracy that started with the Magna Carta in 1215, as of 804 years later, is finished. Right now,
well,
it's on hold.
You know what? Maybe it's time. Maybe it's time for something new. Maybe this has run its course.
Well, I hope you're saying that ironically, because, you know, the something new from the outstart doesn't seem as an improvement for now.
Well, what do you think is going to happen? Any predictions?
Well, interestingly, I've been following this thing pretty closely for months and years, and there are attempts afoot to basically do something, but it seems that the most likely thing to happen, it may be a vote of no confidence. And if that happens, as of now, unless, you know, there are a lot of creative lawyers on both sides, but it would seem that if there are new elections, Johnson can basically call them from after October 31st. It's his prerogative. And that means crashing out with no deal. And I think that's what he's aiming for.
If that were to happen, what do you think the result would be, crashing out with no deal?
Well, as you say, you know, rather chaotic. I mean, and of course, there is a lot of disaster, trash talk. But I don't think that all the forecasts that have been put out by non-government organizations, governmental agencies, businesses of all sizes, from, you know, global to local, are all wrong. You know, basically, if you can imagine, you have a truck of eggs and you want to bring them from France to England, and you have to wait several days or a week to bring them over because there is a huge queue at the border. What is the result? You know, and I'm just using one example. There are even much more urgent provisions. I mean, everything is going to be like, I don't know if you have experience or how much experience you have of crossing third world countries' borders. I have. I drove from New York to Panama City in 1983 in the middle of revolutions and coup d'etat.
Wow.
And I can tell you that every time I had to cross a border, it was a matter of hours, but I had one little Volkswagen Rabbit. You know, I didn't have a truck of merchandise, but that's basically what we're looking at if there is no deal. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out.
Yeah, and unfortunately, not a lot of rocket scientists apparently voted. So I guess it's interesting times. We're going to have to see where it goes, what takes place. But it certainly seems like the theme of utter lunacy, chaos, and unpredictability is not confined to our borders, and we're going to see some rather interesting, dramatic, maybe even sad things happen in the next couple of months.
It's a worldwide plot, you know, and I don't want to be conspirationalist, but we have a Putin in Russia, we have an absolutist government in China,
mm-hmm.
we have Bolsonaro in Brazil,
mm-hmm.
we have Trump, and now we have Johnson, interesting similarity with the hairdos, but, you know, and then there are all the satellites. Personally, I'm from Italy, and right now it seems that the tide has been temporarily stopped there. But, you know, we had a pretty disgustingly reactionary government for 14 months. Now it seems that reason is prevailing, you know, and the main party of the so-called left has accepted to make a government with the newcomers.
Well,
which are sort of leaning left, but, you know, they're a strange animal that nobody mm-hmm. knows how to basically fix. And you know, this would be a much, much wider discussion. But there are some places and some instances where, I don't want to say reason triumphs, but at least the stupidity is being, you know, dyked.
For now, anyway. It does feel as if a lot of the ugly is being expressed in many countries around the world at the same time. And I can only think of one other time in recent memory where that has happened before. It didn't end well. So let's hope that reason prevails and that we get some sanity back soon. I want to thank you for your call, though, and for your thoughts. And let's check in after all this happens and see where things stand.
Thank you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. And Kyle is here. Yeah. Wait a minute. Hold on. They press these buttons so that things don't work. Hold on. I got to press that to make it. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
There you are.
I'm over here.
Did you find a parking space or did you abandon the car?
I did.
It was getting to that point. It really was.
It's an amazing atmosphere out there. Very busy. Very busy Brooklyn is.
Yeah, it's so. Like the population tripled overnight. I don't know what's going on.
Good for everybody. Good for,
well,
for them.
Well, it's raining a little bit, and that always messes things up.
That was fun. It was an adventure, right?
You call that fun. All right, we were looking at Waze. Waze kept adding time. You know, we gained all this time. Then Waze said, no, you know what? I'm going to add 7 minutes and make you late. So, yeah, I'm blaming Waze for making us late.
The point is we're here.
Yeah.
And amazing discussion about this fall of democracy overall. And you know what I think it is? I think it's like a bet that the EU
needs... I
keep
hitting the microphone. God, I'm sorry.
The EU needs Britain more than Britain needs the EU, or at least they're going to kind of... They want to crash out such that they're needed, you know, so that they think they can kind of flip the power and that they may somehow end up in a position where they can really negotiate because
Look,
all bets are off. There's no more deal or nothing to rely on. So every single thing has to be negotiated. So therefore, they get all of the restrictions and limitations, but they think the EU will want to come and coordinate every little bit, and then they can kind of micromanage each step of that process and eventually kind of work out the kind of arrangement that where they feel like they're ahead.
But look, this is how you know that the whole thing is nonsense, because Brexit was basically England taking control and saying, you know what, we want to a voice in our own destiny. We don't want anybody telling us what to do. And so, you know, for the last couple of years, they've been trying to work it out, found that it's much more difficult than they thought it could ever be. And now, at the crucial moment where they're figuring out what are we going to do as the deadline looms, they decide to shut people up who disagree with them. It's the same thing they were voting against. They wanted control over their own destiny. And now when someone disagrees with them and wants control over their own destiny, just shut up, go away for 5 weeks, and by the time you get back, it'll be too late to do anything about that. Let me see if we have a phone call on this line. They've been there a while. Is anybody there?
Yes. Hi, Emmanuel. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Okay. Well, my heart goes out to Great Britain. Boris Johnson, to me, he's a bargain basement version of Donald Trump. He's like a cheap knockoff. He's buffoon, but not full-blown buffoon to the level of Trump, of course. So he's terrible, and I hope that that Britain will eventually boot him out of office at some point. But I guess they're stuck with him for the foreseeable future, which is very regrettable.
Well, let me just also ask if there was any particular reason that you only extended your sympathy to Great Britain and left out Northern Ireland, which is part of the United Kingdom, but it's not part of Great Britain because Great Britain is an island. It's very confusing.
Well, that was an oversight on my part.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
I do have an extremely deep affinity for Britain, for, you know, the cultural exports that they've given us, or, you know, that I've enjoyed over the years. Mm-hmm. All the great music, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, the Who, David Bowie, Eric Clapton, and, of course, the writers, from Shakespeare to George Orwell to J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis.
You know who you left out?
Monty Python.
You know who you left out? Like 1.5 million other people.
Well, I mean, they're just the ones that came to the top.
Yeah, of course.
I mean,
there's so much. It's a ridiculous amount.
There is. That one island, and, you know, it's great. I mean, how I'm so indebted to them. They've gotten me through a lot of hard times. And, of course, the actors, Olivier, Cary Grant, Charles Laughton, Alec Guinness, Richard Burton. Speaking of technology, though, there was one question I was curious about, because I know you've discussed this in the past, about DVDs that, you know, like a DVD only plays in a certain region of the world.
Yes.
And I was thinking of this when you raised the issue at the beginning, talking about Britain. The BBC World Service, they had this special last year for New Year's Eve. It was a comedy special, and it was like back-to-back, like a dozen stand-up comics in a row. And unfortunately, I only caught like the last 15 minutes of it. So I went online, I went to the BBC World Service website, and I found this broadcast that they aired on New Year's Eve. And I clicked on the play button, and I got this message that said,
you can't play this in your country.
The content is only available, right.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you or any of your colleagues have ever devised some kind of a workaround to get around that, to trick the computer.
We didn't devise it, but it has been devised, and it's extremely simple. All you have to do is subscribe to a service that gives you a VPN in a different country, such as ExpressVPN. That's a really good one. You pick the country you want to be in, Canada, United Kingdom, Italy, and the IP that you come from, everything that you connect to on your computer will appear to be in that country. You'll go to Google, it'll be, you know, Google in that country. You look at news, you'll see news from that country. But most importantly, if you go try to view streaming content, it'll work from that country.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
VPN stands
for... So it's all about a VPN, you're saying, that's based in Britain. That would be the way to do it.
Yes.
Then.
Yeah. And, of course, United States content will stop working.
Yeah. VPN stands for Virtual Private Network. And it's right. A protocol. It's a part of the networking system itself that you could even build your own VPN, and many businesses often use it. But this service is one of many different types, so there's plenty of options out there. But basically, you just need to appear as though you are in Great Britain, and all of that traffic will then be allowed.
It's really ridiculous what they make you go through to see content that is provided for free. For instance, you know, right here in the States. I'll pick a network, what, TBS, TNT, one of those networks, same thing. You basically, to watch content on a device like a Roku or something, on-demand content, you have to enter this information from your provider, such as cable company, satellite company, etc. And then they send you a code, you run to your computer, you get the code, you enter it into a website, and then they allow you to start watching their content, which includes commercials. I don't know why people have to go through all that to watch free content that has commercials, or why it's restricted by region, by country. It's absurd, but that is the reality we live in right now.
No doubt they're selling or reselling your preferences and your sort of usage history itself. So yeah, it's like they figured it out, and then they made it worse.
Absolutely.
If I had a VPN though, would I have to put all my computers on it, or could I just set the VPN to one specific computer?
There's a bunch of different options. You could even set up a piece of hardware like a router or access point to make sure everything that was connected through that device is running on a VPN. So a lot of those different routers and so on can be repurposed or maybe even have the ability to interact with a service or use a service you've built. But suffice to say, they also include a client for each machine, and you can, especially with the services like we mentioned, they often offer you the you know, unlimited devices and so on and so forth. So you would maybe download the app and then use the credentials when you signed up on that device and at all the devices you want. So you can either use it per device independently, or you could go for a fancier router or specifically built sort of bit of hardware where everything that gets an IP from that router is then pushed through that service or your own VPN.
I have to say it's a godsend. When Kyle and I were traveling in Europe a year or so ago, having this running on one of our laptops in a train that had Wi-Fi, we're able to see Vice News, we're able to see Daily Show, stay sane, you know, be able to catch up on what's going on back home. But you would not be able to do that unless you used a service like this.
Yeah, you'd
that's great.
You'd be blocked out wholesale. So, and of course, yeah, like,
oh, it's great news.
Yeah, it's really something important to take advantage of, because functionally, you know, you may be out of the area, but you really are still the same customer you were, and ostensibly you could find that information in other modes. They might as well just get it to you. But until then, there's these good workarounds that we found helpful.
Anyway, thank you very much for your call.
Look into it. One last thing. Do you have any update about the HOPE conference?
Other than the fact that we are still trying to figure that out, for those who don't know, the hotel tripled their price, making it very difficult for us to continue having a conference without bankrupting a lot of people. But we are, we have a bunch of people looking into options. We have so much support. So many people have written in. If you have ideas, write to us, hope@hope.net is the address that that works. And
also
we'll get through this.
Sorry, I just want to add, look out for announcements. @HopeConf is our Twitter handle for the event. And also the hope.net website, yeah. Of course. We'll push out an RSS or an article or maybe even a link as well to the news feed on our homepage, 2600.com.
All right, thanks again
best
for the call.
Thank
all right,
you.
Take care. You know, I don't know if this phone has been ringing ever since that guy started talking. So I really doubt somebody is here, but I'm going to check anyway. Is somebody here?
There's two more ringing.
Is anybody on this phone line?
Hello?
Okay. You see, when you do that, you make it seem like someone's there, and it's possible. Now it's possible somebody be using VoIP or something like that and making it sound good.
Kyle from
Brooklyn. So may I just ask you politely to shut up
first time caller.
Turn down your microphone. Nobody is there, right? This phone line just rings. No, nobody's there. Okay, so I'm going to hang up on you. Wait. It hung up when I said that. You saw that. That's weird.
You just got hung up on by silence.
Wow. Okay, well, this I'm pretty sure is a person. So, good evening.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, Tom from the Bronx.
From the Bronx. How you doing?
I'd like to say this. As bad as Trump is perceived, I'll tell you one thing.
I usually don't like sentences that start like that, but go ahead, finish it.
Wait a minute. When he goes after the Fed, that's true. The Fed is ruining this country financially.
Yeah, but the President of the United States saying that kind of, it makes things a little jittery on the stock market. Not that I really care about that so much, but not the most professional way of dealing with things.
Yeah, but there was a strange meeting. Did you hear in the news?
There's lots of strange meetings.
There was a strange meeting out in Jackson's Hole. I imagine that's Wyoming, where the people for the Fed, they had a meeting, and they keep bad-mouthing Trump. So if they have to have some kind of a sinister meeting like that, they must despise him no end.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I have not been to a meeting in the last several years that has not said something nasty about Trump. So I can understand it. I can see where they're coming from. And especially if he's insulting them, they're going to insult him back, right?
I'm sorry. Yeah, and I disagree. I don't think it was like a secret meeting. That's kind of a mischaracterization, in my opinion.
Well, how did Tom find out about it if it's a secret meeting?
It was all over.
Why didn't they meet right in New York City?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they just wanted to go out to Wyoming.
Why didn't they meet on your station and talk it over?
What, have the Fed meet at our station?
They got to talk behind big walls.
Well, yeah, we don't have very big walls here, that's for sure. But, you know, maybe they didn't know they could. And you can. You can come to BAI and you can have your secret meetings live over the air.
Right. Well like I'm being sarcastic, but it makes me wonder. I mean, if they have to go and badmouth him that way, I mean, he criticizes them. He's right in that regard. He's not right in every regard, but he's right in that regard.
Well, he's right to criticize them, but they're not right to criticize him.
Well, I think his criticism of them is much more valid than anything they have to spew about him.
What about what they're doing? I mean, what course change would you recommend for the Fed?
Get rid of them.
All right. Maybe that's why they're resistant to it. Mm. But listen, this is not a financial show, and I love hearing your opinions. Thanks very much for calling in. We're going to go to other phone calls. We're talking about the demise of the United Kingdom, who has suspended Parliament so that they don't voice inconvenient opinions and try to stop Brexit from happening. And Brexit is on schedule for October 31st. I don't know if that's the best day to choose for something so dramatic. And isn't that also Mischief Day? Isn't that what they call it over there? I think there's, or is that over here?
I'm not certain. I've never really even heard of that day.
You've never heard of Mischief Day?
I mean, that's every day for us, right?
Well, it depends. Depends on what kind of mood we're in.
This is WBAI. This is off the hook.
It's Mischief Night. I'm sorry.
That's exactly what it is.
Okay, it's an informal holiday on which children and teenagers engage in pranks and vandalism. Didn't you know about this?
Wow. Okay.
So it takes place. Okay, I'm sorry. It takes place on October 30th and sometimes on November 4th.
Okay, that's Halloween.
Obvious reasons. It's in the United Kingdom. It's in the United Kingdom. They do things on May 1st as well, but they also do things the night before Halloween. So that's going to be in some parts of the country. Mischief Night is held the night before Halloween. The separation of Halloween tricks from treats seems to have only developed in certain areas, often appearing in one region but not at all nearby. Mischief Night in Yorkshire is known as Mischievous Night, or the shortened Shivus Night. All kinds of other names: Miggy Night, Tic Tac Night, Calm Night, Trick Night, Mickey okay. Night, and
yeah.
is celebrated across Northern England on celebrated on November 4th.
We should be spending this time like contacting the Queen, just making sure she's okay with her decision.
And that's the night before Bonfire Night. They have a holiday what in England called Bonfire Night.
Bonfire Night.
This is why this is hurting so much to see them going down this road. In and around the city of Liverpool, Mischief Night is known as Mizzy Night. Trouble spots were being tackled by Merseyside Police in 2015. Okay, so there's all kinds of mischief ahead. But the day after Mischief Night is the day of Brexit. So it's going to be a lot of fun over in the UK. I can hardly wait. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. I thought I would just throw in, apropos your discussion, the finale of Gilbert and Sullivan's Utopia Limited.
Okay.
There's a little group of isles beyond the wave, so tiny you might almost wonder where it is. That nation is the bravest of the brave, and cowards are the rarest of all rarities. The proudest nations kneel at her command. She terrifies all foreign-born rapscallions and holds the peace of Europe in her hand with half a score invincible battalions. Such, at least, is the tale which is borne on the gale from the island which dwells in the sea. Let us hope for her sake that she makes no mistake, that she's all she professes to be. Oh, may we copy all her maxims and imitate her virtues and her charities, and may we, by degrees, acclimatize her parliamentary peculiarities. By doing so, we shall, in course of time, regenerate completely our entire land. Great Britain is the monarchy sublime, to which some add, but others do not, Ireland.
Wow. And what is that from?
That's from Gilbert and Sullivan's Utopia Limited.
How interesting. Well, thank you for sharing that.
I did not attempt to sing it, but...
I'd love to hear it, but thank you for sharing.
Maybe you could bring in a recording of that next time.
Okay. If there is a next time, for sure. Thanks so much for sharing.
You're welcome.
All right, take care. You know, we're talking about this because we're fascinated by change, by systems, by exceptions to the rules and extraordinary times. It's related to hacking. You might not see it right away, but it is. Whenever you experiment with things, mess around with the status quo, it's fascinating. And that's, I think, why so many of us are interested in this. But there's something else which people are talking about, another system. It's called Operation London Bridge. Have you heard about this, Kyle?
I think yes.
You think you've heard about this? Okay, well, I'll tell you. The phrase London Bridge is down is a very significant phrase. And when you hear that those words said, what that means is that the Queen no longer walks among us. the nicest way I can possibly say it. But when Queen Elizabeth dies, and she will die at some point, she's like, what, 90, 12 or something? I don't know how old. She's very old.
You don't know that.
They live so old. Her mother was very old, too. Over 100. I mean, it's great, but wow.
So this hypothetical, yes, go on.
Uh-huh. Well, this is the phrase that they, of course, after the London Bridge attack, it got kind of confusing. But I think they're still going to use that particular phrase when it happens.
But it sets in motion various things?
It does. It does. Now, the Queen's private secretary will be the first official, not one of the Queen's relatives or part of the medical team. The Queen's private secretary will be the first official to convey the news. And the private secretary is a senior operational member of the royal household of the sovereign of the United Kingdom. And, of course, that's distinct from the great officers of the household. But you know what? We don't have time to get into that.
Well, they would probably know.
Right. I mean. So the private secretary's first act will be to contact the incumbent prime minister of the United Kingdom, and civil servants will convey the code phrase, "London Bridge is down," to him using secure telephone lines. The Foreign Office's Global Response Center, based at a secret location in London. What? Didn't we go there? I'm pretty sure we were there.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, there was some drinking involved, but I'm pretty sure that's where we wound up. And you know what? I don't know where it is, though.
They showed us a button. I don't know.
Well, there were lots of buttons, actually, and
they wouldn't
lights,
let us
too.
Touch any of them.
No, yeah. I didn't want to touch it, but it was kind of scary, but also kind of comforting too.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it was very quiet.
Yeah, and they had eggnog because it was Christmas time. You know, yeah. I'm saying too much.
You really shouldn't talk
but
about
yeah,
that.
It's the Global Response Center, which is at a location that I could not find. So no worries from me. They will communicate the news to the governments of the 15 other countries of which the Queen was head of state, the Commonwealth realms. And I guess Canada is one of them, Australia, and I don't know the rest, but there's a bunch. And to the governments of the other countries of the Commonwealth of Nations. Maybe that's what Canada is. I'm not exactly sure. I should know these things.
That'll take a couple hours, right?
A lot of phone calls. Mm-hmm. A lot of phone calls. The media would be informed via an announcement to the Press Association and the British Broadcasting Corporation through the Radio Alert Transmission System. Yeah, their system is known as RATS. I'm not making this up. And to commercial radio through a network of blue obit lights. Blue obit lights, which will alert presenters to play inoffensive music and prepare for a news flash. They have blue obit lights in the radio stations that light up and get you to play inoffensive music. You know, like the music we don't play. Mm-hmm. They have that stashed away. It's kind of like, you know, when a Soviet leader died, they would just play a funeral dirge and nobody knew why. You had to sort of figure it out. Kind of the same thought there.
Yeah.
So, okay, you're listening to radio, commercial radio, and all of a sudden you start hearing inoffensive music. Well, that's when you start worrying about the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, prepare for a news flash. BBC Two would suspend their scheduled programming for the day and switch to BBC One's broadcast of the announcement. So they simulcast. They do that sometimes.
Yeah.
BBC News, that's their internal news network, will air a pre-recorded sequence of portraits during which the presenters on duty at the time will prepare for the formal announcement by putting on somber clothing prepared specifically for this purpose. Now, okay, they might not have thought of this, but if they put the somber clothing together too far in advance,
yeah,
the presenters might get fatter.
Or they would be out of fashion,
and
perhaps.
Considering how long these monarchs can live, that is entirely possible. So I would just say check it every few months, see if it still fits.
Or just wear somber stuff all the time.
You don't want buttons bursting on the air. That's the worst thing.
No, that would be uncouth.
Now, The Guardian has reported that The Times has 11 days of pre-prepared coverage ready. I don't know why they're ratting out another newspaper. And that ITN and Sky News have long rehearsed her death, but substituting the name Mrs. Robinson. I don't know why they picked Mrs. Robinson. Okay, so a footman would pin a dark edge notice to the gates of Buckingham Palace. At the same time, the palace website would display the same notice. The Parliament of the United Kingdom would be recalled, kind of like what we're seeing now, except not told to shut up, just recalled, brought back. I guess the opposite of what is happening now. If possible, it would meet within hours, and the Prime Minister would address the House of Commons.
Is that recalled as the like the Senate reconvening after a shooting or
yeah,
two?
Yeah, like that. Exactly like
yeah.
What Mitch McConnell didn't do.
Yeah,
exactly like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the day after the Queen's death, the Accession Council would meet at St. James Palace to proclaim the new monarch. Parliament would meet that evening when MPs would swear allegiance to the new monarch or die. Well, it doesn't say that, but that's implied. Because, I mean, what are you going to do if you don't swear allegiance to the new monarch? And then all kinds of things involving the funeral and moving the casket and lying in state and all that. But, wow, they've got a system. They've got a system in place. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi.
Hi, what's on your mind? I'm sorry? Can you hear me?
Hi.
Yes, let's start over.
About.
Where are you calling from?
Yeah, UK, London.
Oh, you're calling from the UK. Wow. Well, then we'll give you the floor. Which means you can speak.
All right, okay. Yeah, hi, Emmanuel. Hi, Kyle.
Hello.
How you doing?
We can hear you great.
Yeah, this is Zap from London 2600.
Oh my goodness, it's Zap. We haven't spoken to you in a while.
Oh, it's been forever.
Yeah, just want to give you an update on Brexit, really. Thought I'd phone in.
Yes, please do.
It's pretty difficult with this lag, but yeah. So far, London hasn't erupted in riots or anything so far. But I don't know what's going to happen on Halloween.
Uh-huh.
That's going to be fun.
It's going to be something else. You know, we're thinking of coming over for that.
Yeah, I think we're going to do a few tricks.
Yeah, I think there might be some tricks that are being done on you. So how are people responding to the news of Parliament being suspended?
Basically, people have been protesting outside Downing Street.
Okay. So Boris can hear them?
Yep, so people are going on the streets and protesting. There'll probably be more protesting in the next few weeks when it's more organized.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense, yes. And media coverage, what has that been like over there?
It's been covered on the BBC, you know, it's on the radio reports and stuff.
Well, we've been hearing, something of it here, not nearly as much as you're probably hearing. I can only imagine what the newspaper headlines will be tomorrow.
Yeah, has there been any revelry
or
any contrary spirits, like revelry or excitement that people are expressing?
Yeah, celebration about Parliament being suspended, any of that?
Or just shock?
Well, the country is divided like 50-50. People either want Brexit or don't want Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
So half the country is going to be happy, half the country is not going to be happy.
Yeah, that's certainly true. But you know, I would say even if I wanted something, I'd be kind of perturbed by silencing the critics. You know, that kind of makes it feel like you're on the wrong side.
Yeah, well, democracy doesn't work that way. You need to have a voice. If you're pro or against, you must have a voice.
And also a plan. Have you thought, or are people talking about what's going to happen after Mischief Night on that day when the UK either comes up with a last-minute deal or crashes out? What's it going to be like then?
I have no idea, and I think a lot of people are worried about that because it's the fear of the unknown.
Well,
now you knows what's going to happen.
You're a hacker, so you notice things that other people don't notice. Have you noticed anything in the way of preparation or unusual things that are going on, perhaps? In anticipation of this October 31st deadline?
Not really at the moment because it's still the early days. We only found out today. One thing that I have noticed over time since the referendum, there seems to be more racism on the street, especially to foreigners.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I guess they feel emboldened, kind of like they do here with Trump.
That's very familiar, actually.
Yes, it's very familiar. I mean, I think more or less happened both at the same time, really.
That sort of outward bitterness.
What is happening to the world?
Yeah, really. Good question.
Wow. Well,
yeah, send help. We have oil.
Yeah, well, on that subject, Zap, what can we do to help? What would you like to see from Americans?
I honestly can't say at the moment because I'm still in shock, really. Boris Johnson has forced this, basically closing down Parliament, so we don't have a voice with our legal representatives that we voted for. So, early days.
Yeah. Well, our thoughts are with you, and we hope you get through this. We hope all your friends get through this as well, and that next time we see you, it'll be under more pleasant circumstances.
Yeah, and let us know. Give us some updates if this does galvanize people in such a way that you know, they're taking action in the meantime. Because other than that, it seems like we're left to be on the sidelines collectively, everyone, really, and wait and see what happens.
Well, us hackers can do the best that we can do.
All right. Well, keep having the 2600 meetings regardless, okay? Don't let anything get in the way.
We will. They will never fade out. In fact, we're just starting a new one in Bournemouth.
Oh, really? Well, make sure you send it to us so that we can publicize it in the magazine.
Only when it's official, because at the moment it's going to be on the Saturday.
Okay.
After the first Friday.
Okay. Well, we can make that work out somehow. Yes.
Yep. That'll help you get your numbers up, and then we can move it into print as soon as it is ready. Yeah.
Well, Zap, great hearing from you. Yeah. Get some sleep. It must be about 2 o'clock in the morning there, right?
We'll begin 2 o'clock in the morning in about 5 minutes. Yeah.
Okay. Well.
But it was worth staying up for you guys.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you for calling us. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's great to hear you.
All right. Keep up the good fight.
All right. We'll try. We have our own battles here. Great. Good to hear from a familiar voice over there. Want to thank the people who did call in. And for those of you who we didn't get to tonight, well, we're sorry. We can't get to everybody. But you can write to us, oth@2600.com, and we'll be thrilled to maybe read your letter over the air, over the airwaves.
Yes, we're also available at Hacker Radio Show.
On Twitter.
Yes, on the Twitter platform. Yeah, for other archive information, it's 2600.com/offthehook.
And of course, we'll be following this story as long as it continues to evolve, as well as the many other stories that are happening in the world of technology overseas and here. Because that's what we've been doing at Off the Hook since 1988. And we basically keep our eyes on many, many things that are going on. This is just one of them, but it's a big one. It really is. And if you haven't heard much about this in the mainstream media, well, look elsewhere. Look in some British newspapers. Look at some alternative news sites. Listen to WBAI. And you'll learn a lot. You'll learn a lot about what's going on, not only in the UK, but in other parts of the world as well, because it's a whole big world out there. And as part of the hacker community, we're fascinated by it. And we like to share stories and trade hacking info between these nations and be there when things get difficult. I remember Election Day 2016, or the day after, how many people I heard from many parts of the world. Are you okay? Is everything going to be all right? And it was good. It was good to hear from people there. So
yeah, check in. Check in if you have friends out there, and can keep communicating.
Yeah, moments of crisis. That's what your friends are for. We are out of time, and we'll be back again next week with another exciting program dealing with all kinds of other issues as well. But we'll be watching this story as everything else happens. Till then, have some memories for the United Kingdom. We'll see you next time.
Code Pink, Women for Peace is coming to you live from Washington, D.C. and New York City, Thursday at 11 a.m. Code Pink Radio is an energizing new program focused on ending wars and militarism and building a peace economy. Listen weekly to robust conversation and inspiration from grassroots peacemakers from places like Korea, Yemen, Venezuela, Palestine, and Iran, as well as peacemakers in our nation's capital who are confronting war hawks in the White House and in Congress and modeling the actions we want our government to take. Again, that's Code Pink Radio, Thursdays at 11 a.m. on Washington, D.C.'s WPFW and New York City's WBAI, an engaging hour of cutting-edge conversation not to be missed.
We are women of the world. We're from the east, south, north, and west.
This is Isaac Ferguson, co-host and historian of the award-winning Midnight Ravers, inviting you to join WBAI 99.5 FM in New York on Labor Day, September 2nd, for Caribbean Carnival, live from Eastern Parkway, Brooklyn. All day long, from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., WBAI will broadcast the annual Caribbean Carnival. Tune in and enjoy the music, and the no-holds-barred bacchanalia of the greatest street festival in North America. Again, live from Eastern Parkway on Labor Day, September 2nd, from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. for the Caribbean Carnival.
Hi, this is Christian McBride, and you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
Welcome to The Cutting Edge, where journalism, culture, politics, and activism converge. I'm Dred Scott Keyes. In this edition of The Cutting Edge, MSNBC's Joy Ann Reid talks about her new book, The Man Who Sold America, Trump and the Unraveling of the American Story. She argues that Trump is damaging American democracy daily, key administrative positions, using questionable executive orders, and doing Vladimir Putin's bidding, while living up to his opening mantra, to deconstruct the administrative state. She's interviewed by author and journalist Sophia Nelson.
Let me say first off, congrats on this book. It is powerful. And in a word, it's disturbing all at one time. And I want to get into that. And by disturbing, I mean you've uncovered some pretty profound stuff here relative to the 45th President of the United States. And so the first question that I have for you in this amazing book titled The Man Who Sold America is, tell me, why did you write the book and why now?
Well, first of all, Sophia, I want to say thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to you. And I got to tell you, the reason that I wrote the book principally is just because covering this president, covering Donald Trump, it's like a fire hose of news that's constantly coming at you, a fire hose of bad things. And they each kind of erase the thing before. So in one day, you can have 10 headlines where the first one for any other president would have been catastrophic and maybe even presidency ending. And then that gets erased from the memory hole, literally sometimes within the same day, if not within days. And so the main reason I wrote the book was just to preserve the history, as much of it as I could get in before it's gone, to be honest, before we forget what's happening. I think that this presidency is so unique and so, in a lot of ways, uniquely destabilizing and dangerous to our democracy that I just wanted to remember it. So that was the main reason. And the second reason was kind of as sort of a plea or a warning, I don't know which is the better word, because I feel sometimes like Americans feel that what we are is eternal, that we can't lose it. That this position we've gained as the leader of the free world, as the, you know, preeminent democracy, the shining city on a hill, people think that's permanent. But we're a young country, and it can slide, and it can slide fast. So I wanted to kind of sound the alarm that the things that we used to send monitors to other countries to, you know, prevent happening can happen to us, and a lot of ways are happening to us.
Joy, I think that's a really great point. It leads me to the second question I have. You know, again, you did a really great job. I mean, this book is, you've got to read this book because this book is part, it's filled with reporting, but it's also insights from you. It's got a good historical context. But one of the things that really made me pause was where you talked about this Trump presidency didn't just happen in 2015 in the primaries or in 2016. Like, there was a lead up to this happening, to the Trump presidency. And I want you to talk a little bit about that. How does a guy who was on the tabloids, he was the real estate playboy, how does that guy go from that to leader of the free world? And specifically, Joy, I want you to get into a little bit, you talked about this post-Obama white fear, some rage, birtherism, Confederate statues, the alt-right, all of that, and how we got to this presidency.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that Donald Trump benefited from a couple of things. One is celebrity. You know, he was able to worm his way into the American zeitgeist really over the course of decades of presenting himself to the media, particularly to the New York media, and I think that's important. He presented himself to the New York media as far back as the 1980s as this billionaire Lothario who the women could not keep his hands off of. There, here's a supermodel who wants Donald Trump. He could date Princess Diana if he really wanted to. All of these myths that he made about himself, none of which were actually true. He was just a serially married guy who inherited the equivalent of $413 million from his father. But he presented himself as this kind of Horatio Alger figure. And he did it in part because he wanted the respect of the Manhattan elite. In that real estate world, the Trumps were kind of looked down on. They were Queens rich, as we say. They were not considered part of the Manhattan elite, but Donald Trump wanted to be. He wanted to break out of his father's Queens empire and be respected by the New York Times, by Newsweek, by Time Magazine, by those people. Anna Wintour, he wanted to respect him as a part of the fashion elite. He wanted to be a part of that, and he never could quite get in. So what he did instead is he created sort of a tabloid version of fame, and it did get him into the zeitgeist. He was in, you know, more than 67 rap songs referenced him as like a synonym for wealth. Trump equals rich. He was able to get the New York tabloids to follow his exploits, even when he was pretending to be his own publicist, John Barron, and pitching them stories about his sexual exploits. He was able to get on Howard Stern and be a weekly guest, you know, giggling about sometimes weirdly his daughter. But he embedded himself in the national conversation. So people would ask him, you know, Phil Donahue or Larry King would want his thoughts on world events. He had no expertise in them, but he was constantly being asked what he thought. And twice before, he tried to translate that into a run for president, or at least he threatened to, but he never pulled the trigger on it. I think where we got Trump was that he understood the New York media because that's where he came from. He understood the way to use celebrity because by the time he got on The Apprentice, he was actually a broke man. His empire was crumbling, but he managed to sell an image of success and wealth and privilege that kind of bamboozled the country.
So,
when you
bring
combine
that... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but bring that to the national stage. So how do we get from there, the New York guy, to this national stage? Let's go to the 2015 primary, and really what I think you really got into well in the book was this notion of Trump kind of wanting, for lack of a better word, revenge, if you will, on, like you said, he was looked down on. You talk about the White House Correspondents' Dinner where President Obama, remember when he clowned Trump a little bit, he was making a joke of the birtherism, and apparently Trump was very angry about that. Talk about that a little bit, because I want to get into the seeds of anger and fear that he kind of played into.
Yeah, I mean, people ask, how can a guy who lives in an all-gold palace relate to the average white working-class guy? Well, it's resentment. The thing they have in common is they resent the same people. Even as Donald Trump is coming up and he's making all this money, losing all this money, and then getting bailed out by his dad and the Russians, he's really resentful that the culture doesn't respect him, that the elites don't respect him. He shares that with a lot of the Republican base. I think the other 16 people who ran for president in 2015, they thought the Republican base wanted what they want, which is tax cuts for the wealthy, deregulation, small government. Donald Trump understood that they want revenge. that they want revenge for a country they feel is culturally sliding away from them, that cultural cool is now in the hands of black people, that you look at the NBA, it's black elites. You look at TV, it's Oprah. You look in the White House, it's Barack Obama. You look at music, it's hip hop. It's all of these non-white, non-Christian cultures encroaching on white America's one-time dominance and control over the American culture. You know, white Americans still have most of the wealth, but black and brown and gay and all sorts of other people were taking over what the country meant, what it meant to be American, the pride of place. And Donald Trump 100% got that because he shares it. Remember in the 80s, he used to complain about Japan. Japan is killing us. No one respects us in the world. China is destroying us. He always had that same mentality. So when he walked, you know, rode down that escalator in Trump Tower and said the Mexicans are rapists and they're coming over and they're sort of invading our country, the base got that. That's how they feel. They locate their pain, their sense of loss, the sense they're not doing as well as their parents, and they blame that on non-white migrants, and so does he. So what Donald Trump did is he took advantage of decades, if not a century, of white resentment, of growing white resentment against the culture and against governmental assistance for people who are not white and not Christian, and he turned it into a run for president. And obviously, a lot of people believed what he wanted, what he wanted, and that's how he was able to win.
So, Joy, would you say that this was, in a sense, then a backlash to the Obama presidency? I mean, is that what this comes down to, or are we oversimplifying when we say that? What do you think?
I don't think so, because I think Barack Obama, Sophia, represented bodily, in human form, all the things that the white working class, if you just put them in a category writ large, were resentful of. Not all of them, obviously, but the Trumpists. They resent the fact that here's this Ivy League educated black man with this exotic name that in their minds was a Muslim, comes from immigrant roots, and then he takes the presidency over the objections of the majority of white Americans. He wins by 10 million votes with young voters, LGBT voters, black voters, brown voters, surging him into the presidency. At the same time, the census is announcing and broadcasting that America will be a non-white majority country by 2047, rolling back the date from when they first announced it in 1998 during the Clinton years, that it would be like 2052. So white America is watching the tide of demographic change move into the White House in human form, this black family with their black children with this last name, Obama, middle name Hussein. And they just feel the country sliding away. And Obama represented that in physical form. At the same time, the old coal industry and steel industry are dying away. The America they remember, that their parents and grandparents remember, is sliding away while the Obama world is sliding in. And when Barack Obama gets reelected, even though his ratings with every single group of white Americans, old, young, female, male, you know, Midwestern, Southern, everywhere, tank, and he still wins by 5 million votes, the resentment against Obama and Obamaism, with its DACA for undocumented migrants, with its profound changes in marriage through the Supreme Court, with this liberalization on things like health care, even though they got health care out of it, there was a huge resentment in a large part of white America, and that drove in the backlash. You know, I kind of liken Donald Trump to the redemption period and Barack Obama to the period after the Civil War, the Reconstruction period. Whenever we've had forward progress socially in this country that has benefited people of color, there's always been a backlash. Reconstruction bred the redemption movement. The civil rights era bred the Nixon era and the Reagan era. And unfortunately, the backlash to the Obama era is Trump.
Interesting, Joy, which brings me to my next question. I'm going to read a passage of your book to you briefly here. It's in your first chapter. And again, it was one of those moments where I just kind of stopped. And here's what you write here. Many Americans awoke on the morning after the 2016 presidential election to an unthinkable outcome, one that many deemed a mark of cultural decline. Politics often brings unpleasant surprises, but Donald Trump, president of the United States, was one that few, not the pundits, the professional statistical odds makers, the political press, or the Democratic candidate and her party came close to anticipating. I mean, you kind of got into that, but what did everybody else miss that he tapped into? I mean, everybody got it wrong. What did we miss?
Yeah. Well, I think part of it is this notion of American exceptionalism, right? So this backlash against migration by non-white and non-Christian